You are listening to FinOps Today, a podcast from Ramp, where the world's most innovative finance leaders share what's on their agenda. Here's your host, Ramp's own head of finance and capital markets, Alex Song.
Hi, welcome to FinOps Today. On this week's episode, we are speaking to Artem Mashkov of SwagUp. How are you?
Awesome. It's a beautiful day in New York City. Nice weather. So much better than Miami, JK. but yeah, played some basketball today and really in a great mood. So excited for this podcast.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We've interviewed a series of CFOs from other kind of like-minded and similar businesses out there. Mostly, we're going to try to spend the next half hour or so delving into kind of the intricacies of the finance suite, the ins and outs of being a CFO. We'll delve a little bit into your background as well as your company. Sound good?
Yeah, excited for it. Let's go.
Cool. Maybe to start, why don't you tell us a little bit about SwagUp and what your company does?
Sure. So essentially, when you start your new job and you get an incredible gift, if you're lucky, right? Some companies don't do this, but the right companies, you'll get an incredible gift. It'll be a box and there'll be a bunch of really nice goodies inside. It'll be a t-shirt, it could be a tumbler, it could be an Oculus, right? Depending on how much a company loves you, right? And we are the company that makes that happen. We provide the pipes for getting those products from the vendors to you. So much so that not only do we provide the pipes for the companies, but if anyone wants to plug into the network, we also provide the pipes for them. The same way Shopify provides the pipes for e-commerce, SwagUp provides the pipes for promotion, basically custom supply chain. We're a custom supply chain as a service company. And the best use case for that right now is promotional products. So that swag pack you get when you start your new day at the company, that's us. There's other uses for it. You could use it for your VIP clients. You could use it for your investors. You could use it for fundraising. We've had companies do that. But essentially, that swag that gets to your door, or to your office, that we make that happen.
Very cool. Well, we've got some happy Ramp employees who over the last couple of months have been able to enjoy some of this swag. Maybe tell us a little bit about the history. How long have you guys been around? Any money that you may or may not have raised? And what is the scale of the company these days?
Yeah, so we've been around since mid of 2017. Michael Martocci started the company. I knew him from before, SwagUp. He's a buddy of mine, and I do angel investing. And the way I get my deal flow is I do pro bono consulting. So another friend of mine who actually went to junior high school with, and I invested in a couple of sports bars with, introduced me to Michael. He met him through Instagram. And he's like, look, you have to talk to this guy. He's young, but super insightful, super smart. You're going to love him. Okay, so we had dinner. Introduced me. I'm like, look, you're incredibly smart. You know how to listen. I can't believe you're 19 years old. You're humble. I'm like, these are all the things. Like, I'm not that. I'm not humble. I'm extremely arrogant. I'm smart, but I don't know how to listen well. So I'm like, I want to be your friend. Teach me, And I'm like, and in return, I'll teach you with anything you need to know about, like just like building businesses. Because at that point, I had my first business at 19. Then I started is right before the first recession. We'll get into that later. But I'm like, we'll trade off, right? And then anything you do, just let me know. I'll help you with it. And then he started a company selling swag. And I was advising him. And then around a year in middle of 2018, I was like, listen, you need to have a payroll. And you need to have insurance. You should have this lease signed. He's like, great. I don't want to deal with any of this nonsense. Can you do it for me? And I'm like, well, I could invest and then we could hire some people. He's like, no, I want you to do it. So if you want equity, you're going to have to like join the company. I was like, okay, I guess I'll come on. And I came on as COO originally, but it was very like back office ops heavy and finance heavy. So actually previous year, I transitioned to the CFO role. So that's kind of like how I got into SwagUp and how I met Michael. And then the company itself, we did 168,000 year one, 3.5 year two, which is when I joined, 7 year three, then 22, and then we just finished with 53 million for 2021. So high growth. We've taken on exactly zero outside capital. This was all customer. I would say bootstrapped or self-funded. That's not true. It was all customer funded, coming straight from operating revenue and profit. And so that's where we are now at the current stage. And it's a very interesting industry. If you want to dive into it a little bit later, but thankfully it's not very good, so that we've been able to take advantage of that and kind of just be better.
That's incredible. Bootstrap business, you know, 50 some odd million in revenue. That's absolutely incredible. But yeah, let's delve into your background and your history a little bit as well. You know, how did you have the kind of the connections, the background, the expertise, right? Angel investing, et cetera, that led you to this seat. And, you know, how did you wind up picking kind of finance as the area to focus on?
Well, so I'll give you a quick background. I went to, it's funny because everybody that went to the school will tell you right away they went to the school. So I went to Stuyvesant High School in New York City. I know you guys have a bunch of people on your team that went to Stuy too. That's the first thing we usually mention is that, you know, before college, it's like, that's like the main thing. So I went to that school, was a little bit of a slacker there. Legitimate just didn't send my like transcripts to colleges at the end, or the other colleges didn't send my SAT scores. So kind of didn't get in anywhere because I didn't like apply properly. All my friends were going to Ivy League. So at that point, the only experience I had was either working in a camp as a camp counselor for a nonprofit or giving out flyers at a cell phone store like in South Brooklyn on Brighton Beach. So I went and I started working in a cell phone store, and I worked there for literally 7 days a week for like 9 months straight, picked up the business like Malcolm Gladwell's 10,000 hours of practice. And then the partners were leaving and they're like, hey, do you want to buy into the business? We need money to start a new one. My mom made a terrible business decision. Hindsight, it was great, but at that point it was terrible. Like, I would advise her against it. She invested her life savings into her son, who, you know, messed up applying to college because he didn't bother to send his like transcripts in on time, in a business that he's only learned for 9 months. Like I said, terrible, like at that point, terrible idea. And this was in 2007. And I paid her back within 7 months. I insisted on giving her interest because I wanted to make sure that it was a business transaction. And then 2008 hit and everybody's like, oh shit, right? Retail, everything. It was very, very difficult. And at that time, I just like, okay, how do I use this to my advantage, right? Because nothing, it's like matter, right? It doesn't go away. It just gets shifted. The advantage gets shifted. So what I ended up doing is I expanded when the leases were so low because retail shut down everywhere. And I ended up going from South Brooklyn into North Brooklyn. And we opened up a store in North Brooklyn in Williamsburg, you know, in 2008, essentially. So we locked in a 10-year lease. And I was also able to hire a bunch of people from Wall Street who were getting paid like 80K, but I was able to hire them for 40K. Is they didn't, you know, that was the market for them. So I ended up getting all these like high quality people and basically grew that business. It's a Verizon Wireless franchise, still active today, still active to this matter. And we grew that business to up to 12 locations, and we survived two recessions basically, and we survived Amazon. And we did that by really focusing on service and customer service. And if you go on Google right now and you type in paging zone, we have by far the best reviews out of everybody. And that allowed us to survive during COVID too, because what we started doing is we, once again, it's like, oh, people are not going to the stores. There's less traffic. What do we do? Well, we knew the people that were coming in, they really needed help. So we're like, okay, so we'll just do micro IT services. Instead of, you know, we're not going to sell as many phones, but a lot more people need Zoom set up on their computer because they don't have an IT department on site anymore. So we ended up actually doing really well during COVID too, because we were in essential service and we were setting up IT. So that's kind of like the story of like my base, and it became essentially passive income. And that's where I learned managerial accounting and managerial finance. And I ended up actually dropping into school. I ended up going to Baruch College after I already bought the business, because I'm like, I don't know how to do any of these like hard skills, so I need to learn. So I graduated with a degree in entrepreneurship and small business management from Baruch College. It took me around like 5 years because I was working, still like physically working in retail. And then the problem with franchises and franchise with Verizon is they tell you how much you can expand. So essentially, if you're doing well, they don't care. You know, it's not like you go, okay, I want more locations. So they have to give you locations. It has to be in their plan. So we had all this money coming in. We couldn't use it to grow in the business. We couldn't like reinvest it. We weren't allowed to sell online. So we started doing like angel investing. And that's kind of how I got into angel investing. I did a couple of hospitality plays. I have a vegan crepery in Williamsburg, Little Chalk. It's like my favorite pet project. And then I have a couple of other things going. Most of them did not work out. Some of them worked out really well. As long as you win more than you lose, I think that's the rule of investing. And real estate worked out pretty well, especially with what's been happening recently. So yeah, so that's kind of like how I got into angel investing and just had money pile up and I don't like it sitting there, essentially.
That's an incredible origin story. Now, you know, here you are, right? First COO and now CFO of Swag Up. That's incredible. It's an incredible origin story. Have all of your companies been based in New York?
Yeah, pretty much. Because I was very big into physical business at first. And then I had a company I started, Dev Tribe. That was based in New York, but we also had offices in like Ukraine and Poland. But overall, Swag Up is the first remote business. Although, even if though my companies were based in New York, I always liked working from home more because you could really focus a lot more and just like power through the day and get things done. So yeah, Swag Up, I would say, was the first remote company. And then I have another angel investing right now, The Convoy. They're based in North Carolina.
Yeah, that's fascinating. How's the remote experience been? I mean, obviously with the pandemic, most of us have had to essentially force ourselves, right, from kind of physical and proximity to some sort of distributed work. How has that been? And maybe specifically with respect to just hiring, right? Hiring your team, hiring a finance team, building out Swag Up from kind of day one.
Swag Up from day one. So we had an office in New Jersey, Union City, which is like 5 minutes away from Midtown New York. But overall, I'm a big proponent of making friends online. Like one of the best ways that I grew my initial business in retail is because I was on Facebook and I connected with all my high school friends and I was always social. I used to throw parties and then I would just like, hey, come buy things from me. So I was already making friends online. And I used to play a lot of video games as a kid. So for me, making friends online wasn't anything new. You know, I would make them either like play sports in person or I would make them playing video games online. So I think it's not very different. And for Swag Up, you know, we had people that were comfortable, right, with being online already. We had people that were tech savvy. So it was a very easy transition. Like, all right, now you don't have to commute. Cool. Thank you. I think there's a lot of downfalls to remote work, but I think the positives really outweighed. We have people with various disabilities that makes it easier for them to interact within a fully remote environment. Whether before, yeah, sure, you could be remote, but now you're like the person that's remote while everybody else is in the office. But now everybody is on equal footing and everybody's remote. So it's not like Tom, let's zoom him in from Ohio while everybody else is in a conference room. So I think in a time where talent is constrained and it's very difficult to hire, opening it up to remote employees. And we have employees in 27 different states right now, right? So opening that up, besides time zone differences, I think it's been a big plus, especially with opening up people to, you know, people that are disabilities or have issues coming to the office for various reasons, people that have kids at home, they want to spend more time with their kids. I think it's a lot more inclusive. Now, is it harder to build culture? Sure, absolutely. But I think that inclusivity really beats out the, you know, difficulties.
Do you guys have a physical office anywhere?
Yeah, so well, we have to, right? We deal with physical goods. So yeah. We do have a warehouse in Piscataway, New Jersey, 40,000 square foot warehouse. And there is some office space there. And then we have a corporate office in Florida. And that's it. I think long term, we'll have like satellite offices that are like day camps. So less work, more fun. Like we need a place to hug each other and high five each other and then get creative and brainstorm. But I think it's going to be less of the work that gets done in these offices and more of the play. So, and I think that's the solution. Like that's the seatbelt. I always compare remote work and office work to horses and cars. And then absolutely cars are better, but you have to invent the seatbelt. You need to invent traffic lights. There's also traffic. So there's all these benefits that are very, very obvious, but then also obviously you have to mitigate the risks. So I think, you know, satellite offices in various cities, that's going to be our approach to it. So people can still interact and feel like they're a part of the team.
That's awesome. I think Ramp is in a very similar spot right now. We have folks in probably, 25, maybe 30 states. They are mostly working remote. We have an office in New York. We also have a smaller office that we'll be opening up soon in Florida as well. So, you know, the idea is just how do we get pods of people, right, in some of these other locations to come together and, high five each other, right, and just hang out and build a culture remotely. Yeah, that's very cool. How many employees do you guys have now?
So we have 225 employees right now. We roughly doubled in size. We're very careful with expansion. And I would say even too careful, but that's kind of like the cost of being customer funded. But yeah, we're at 225 roughly right now.
And of the 225, how big is the finance function?
Not that big at all. We have a very, very lean finance team. So besides finance, I also have legal reporting. So technically speaking, there's five departments under me. We don't have a COO. Mm-hmm. So I take the functions of back office operations, and we have an SVP for the physical operations. So I have right now, I have an accounting team with roughly three people and director of accounting. And then I have one FP&A person, and then I have a finance ops function where it's one director and six people there too. And this is just recent. And before that, we got to 22 million with two people in finance. So, and that's all thanks to SaaS, honestly. But yeah, so we run very lean. Finance has been kind of like on the back burner. And that's also just because I'm very much like a player coach. I'll go in there. I know how to bill everybody. You know, I've built Verizon Wireless for 10 years. So if after billing Verizon Wireless, I could bill anybody. But now if you want to grow and we want to scale, we kind of started to build out a more robust team.
Wow. So two people, and now you've got quite a whole, host of accounting, FP&A, FinOps, et cetera. What does kind of each of the respective teams do? Accounting, I think we kind of all know what that is. FP&A, sounds like you've got a guy. Financial operations and whatnot, it's a team of six, seems pretty big. What are they in charge of?
Yeah. So I'll give you a little bit of an outline. And the way I like to explain it to our new hires is there's kind of like almost like three branches, and it's the same, similar to government or even similar to kind of time. So financial operations is the present, accounting is the past, and FP&A is basically the future. Accounting is also the controls and checks on the other teams. And then finance ops, that team is large, mostly because our business model, let's say a traditional player in our space will have like 10 vendors. We have up to 500 vendors, and like around 200 of them active at any one point in time. On the flip side, we also have over 4,000 B2B customers, which is an incredibly high number. And then just here, I'll give you some numbers. We've processed 2,500 invoices in the last 30 days, where there's close to 3,000 payments. And then on the flip side for the bills, we have over 2,000 bills and 920 payments to those bills. So that's all finance operations. And our DPO is very low because we try to pay our vendors right away, because we want to make sure that we get the goods right away. We do just in time. We have zero inventory. It's all inventory that's purchased just in time. So the efficiency of the finance operations is critical. We pay a vendor late, they're not going to ship us the goods, or those goods could just go out of stock because, you know, there's other players buying for those goods. So yeah, that's basically why finance, and same thing. And we also don't start orders until the clients have paid us, which means we need to bill them as quickly as possible so mm-hmm. we can lock in the cash and we don't have to underwrite the order and get it out. So that's why those teams are rather large. Not to mention that these orders are always in flight. So we have a little bit of an agency style where we collect prepayments, and then there's a lot of change orders that happen because something went out of stock or a client changed their mind. It's like, oh, you know what? Can you actually move this logo three inches down? Well, we can, but then you would have to use it on, you have to get a different product to do it on. So do you want to get a different? So there's a lot of change orders. So that's why this finance ops function is the more robust, most robust one.
That's incredible. I mean, your business, I mean, it's quite a logistical undertaking, right? I mean, obviously it makes sense. You have, of course, thousands of invoices, a lot of vendors, right? You've got merchants, you've got customers, et cetera, tons of money going back and forth, but also just sheer physical goods, right? I'm sure you need Is there like a separate team that does like physical distribution logistics and I guess we can call it operations, and that's like a whole separate team?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So and we also have a separate purchasing team. So our purchasing team is actually an ops. They not so much care about the cost as they care about the efficiency of the order going through. We want to make sure that our margins are good overall, but like the way I like to describe it is for ordering from us, like ordering from Grubhub, right? It's where you want your food, you want it in 45 minutes. You don't want your money back in 45 minutes. You want your food. And if you don't get your food, you're going to be hangry. So for us, purchasing actually is an ops function, and it's all about how quickly and efficient it is. And obviously the distribution. So when I spoke earlier about our team being, 225 people, it's split up into thirds. So a third of that is physical operations and warehousing. We own the logistics, which is an incredible benefit and an incredible nightmare and headache. So, a third of the team was just that, is logistics and fulfillment. A third of the team is technology, right? Product team and engineering, because we are very tech heavy. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to survive in this industry right now at this scale. 95% of companies are under $2 million in revenue in this industry because they don't have the technology and they're not able to scale up. They just have a traditional agency model. And then the other third of the team is finance and sales and marketing and design and all of these like corporate functions, I would call them. So yeah, we have a whole entire team of physical operations too.
Got it. Well, it's I think the time has come. Let's talk about your SaaS stack. I mean, this is a tremendous business that is extremely complex, right? And you've scaled it over the last 5 years quite tremendously. What is enabling you to do all of this with a very lean team, obviously one that you're growing now? What do you like? What do you dislike? Yeah, tell me about how you're able to enable all of this growth.
I mean, it depends, different things for different teams. A lot of our stuff is actually built on Salesforce. We've managed to convert Salesforce into an ERP system because very early on, that was the only system we could afford to be an ERP system. We're looking to move over from that now because things are kind of like busting at the seams. Our accounting is done in QuickBooks. Once again, not the most robust system for what we're trying to do at this stage, but we've just grown so fast. But some systems are pretty scalable and pretty repeatable. So how we were able to process literally thousands of bills and make them accurate, very early on, I just saw people sending credit card numbers in emails. It's like, hey, just charge your card. And then the purchasing team was also doing the payments. And I was like, whoa, hold up a second. I know how this game is going to go. And then I started auditing our charges. And of course, there was like Best Buy charges on there and this. Because if you think about the fact that we have 350 vendors, like at that time, and there's X times employees, we're not doing proper like KYV, I guess, your vendor. And like they have random employees and these mom and pops like, oh, credit card number. Let me get a PlayStation 5, PlayStation 4, whatever it is at the time. So a lot of fraud going on, obviously, and very hard to track because there's so many invoices and so many numbers coming through. So I'm like, okay, how do I solve this? We were using American Express at the time. I call American Express, like, what do you guys have for me? I need to solve this problem. They're like, well, why don't you, we have a partnership with Bill.com. They could offer virtual credit card numbers. I'm like, dope, connect with Bill.com. Now every single invoice, I shut off all the credit cards. I literally turned them off. Issued new cards. And I said, hey, if you want to get this paid, it has to go through my department, through this one person, send them the request. And then he's going to issue you a credit card the same way. It's going to go through your email. You're going to have, but the way it is, it's locked to that invoice amount. It expires in 30 days. If they could steal the card, I don't care. Take it. If it's already been used, there's nothing you can do about it. And then obviously we were matching the cash out to Bill.com. A couple of issues there. Not every vendor is accepting American Express. There's like this stigma with American Express that they charge higher fees, which is true and not true in certain cases. The fees that you're charged by your merchant service provider depends on the benefits your credit card provides. So the higher the benefits, there's Visa and MasterCards that charge higher fees than American Express. Or if you get level 3 processing data, the fees could actually be lower. Anyways, American Express has this stigma that they charge higher fees, and a lot of mom and pops just don't accept it. So that was always a problem. And actually, that's when I was like, okay, I guess we'll throw it on Chase, but then I have to still audit that Chase card every time because then those vendors, I'm like, so what am I going to do? Issue a separate employee Chase card for every single vendor that doesn't accept American Express. And the thing is, I don't get a choice on these vendors because they have products that we need. And we actually need a lot of these mom and pops because they could do it faster. They could do it higher quality. So like, it's not like I'd be like, okay, let's not use this vendor. They don't accept their payment method. But that was a nightmare. And then that's kind of like, I connected with TK from your product team who went to Stuy with me. And he's like, hey, you guys should probably use this. And then he's like, use Ramp. And I'm like, okay, yeah, cool. So we got Ramp and I'm like, and I could create a separate card for every single vendor. And it's a virtual card and I can lock it only to that vendor. And I'm like, that sounds great. It's not as good as like per invoice, right? You guys didn't have that function at that time. But I'm like, at least if I see fraudulent transactions, I'll be like, this is the vendor that's doing this. And I can be like, hey, you guys got a clean house. You got to look at your employees or, you know, who had access to my card, right? So yeah, so I onboarded Ramp. And then what ended up happening is I was originally going to just use it for that. And then people started traveling or using it for like paying for like McDonald's and stuff like that for corporate dinners, I guess, which is not, sounds terrible now, whatever, we're bootstrapped or customer funded. So McDonald's is a corporate dinner. So, and then it was coming up on the American Express. I'm like, this is impossible to reconcile. This is a nightmare. Nope. So I started turning off American Express for our, even our executives. And I'm like, you're using Ramp now because it's going to be easier for me to track. I don't care. Just use that. So I didn't even want to use it for that purpose. But once I saw how easy it was for this, I was like, use it there. And the reason I didn't want to use it is because here's another tip. By the way, anyone that has American Express, if you have a high vendor variance, a lot of mom and pops, if you're spending all of it on AWS or like whatever, or even Starbucks, it's not going to work. But if you have a lot of mom and pops, they're getting charged high merchant fees because they haven't negotiated a good rate. Because of that, there's more space for cash back. So what American Express is actually able to do, we use their Plum card, is they're able to analyze your spend. Basically, if your merchants are paying high fees, you could get higher cash back from them. So I was able to lock in 2% cash back from American Express, which I'm sure, Alex, you know, nobody offers anymore at scale. Like Capital One offers it with their Spark, but they top you off at 60K, I think, for credit lines. And then I think Citibank has it with a double cash back, but that's only a personal card. So besides those two, nobody else offers 2%. So I was able to negotiate that. So that was that's why I was like, okay, I want to use the 2% because I'm going to get the most cash back. But Ramp being easier to track and validate and, you know, allowing me to hire less people to do all of this was worth it more so than the 2% versus the 1.5% that's offered. So I told you earlier I was going to tell you the story of how your product is better, that even though the deal is not the best, but the product is so superior that I was essentially forced to use it. And you know, I loved it ever since. We've grown, our spend has grown, you know, 10x with you guys. When I originally talking to you, I said, I'm going to give you like 50K or 60K a month or something like that. And just like out of my control, because the product is so good, we kind of like put more and more spend your way.
Well, thank you so much for that very strong endorsement. I love it. So it's safe to say that we are your favorite vendor of all time, right? I'm just kidding.
No. Hold up. It's you're not far off. I think the only other SaaS platform that I've used that is close to you in terms of user experience is Square. And I've used that for the vegan crepery. Square has an incredible user experience, their POS system and ground marketing. But besides that, you guys, Typeform, Trello, and then I'm a big fan of Google Suites. Like mm-hmm. I really love them. But yeah, I think by far in fintech, you guys and Square are probably my favorite two companies in terms of user experience.
Amazing. Well, thank you for that vote of confidence and that endorsement. We, you know, I think user experience, customer experience is super, super important for us.
You are listening to FinOps Today, a podcast from Ramp.
Maybe switching gears a little bit, let's talk about a topic that might be sort of top of mind for a lot of our listeners. We're recording this in kind of mid-Feb. There's been a little bit of chatter on the Twitter sphere about early stage companies, startups, employee compensation, equity options. I think, you know, the CEO of Bolt may or may not have started a firestorm, somewhat controversial thread about that. was just curious, do you have a view on, you know, talent? It's a tough hiring market, compensation, et cetera, how you treat everyone well and fairly. Any thoughts about something that's probably top of mind for a lot of folks these days?
Yeah, I mean, so we're actually doing this process right now, ESOPs. We just had a 409A done. By the way, Carta, another great product. I'm a big fan of Carta. Great user experience. No wonder they have so much of the market share. But yeah, so we're doing ESOPs with, you know, Cooley. And I think, yeah, at a certain stage, people don't care about money as much because once you reach a certain point, okay, cool. But they want equity, obviously. Now, the trick is, are they getting overpriced equity or not? So we're bootstrapped. We're considering raising just because we kind of, in order to get to where we want to get there earlier rather than later. So it's hard to get there earlier if you're just using operating cash flow. But overall, I think that there's a lot of grandstanding and saying something is a good deal when in reality it isn't. And I think there's not enough financial education for employees to realize when something is a good deal or not a good deal. So if you're being given equity at a valuation that's inflated and you're being told to kind of like borrow money to pay for that equity, that might not be a good deal. And that's fine as long as you're not, you know, pretending like it is. So I think that if you're going to treat employees fair, treat them fair and not in words, but in actions, you know, and in reality. And I think that, you know, overall, people need to listen to more to podcasts like this, actually, because financial education, like we're very good at content marketing. We're very good at attention grabbing. You know, a 10-year-old could get 1 million views on TikTok, but a 40-year-old doesn't know how taxes work. So I think that's the problem. And I think some savvy people or ruthless people are taking advantage of that. And there's not a lot of transparency when it comes to equity and how that works. I'm not saying that it's other companies are doing it better. I think there's a lot of companies that are taking advantage of the lack of financial education. But it irks me more when companies are pretending like they're acting in the employee's best interest and they're just doing the same thing or possibly even worse. So that would be my comment there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think financial literacy, right? Financial education, employee education is super, super key. I mean, it's super top of mind, especially if you're growing quickly or hiring quickly. And oftentimes a lot of folks just, you know, don't know what they're getting themselves into. How much of your time, I'm curious, how much of your time do you spend on stuff like this? Stuff like this being payroll, HR, equity compensation, et cetera. You know, it's a little bit of a different, you know, mindset, right? Obviously, then processing invoices and managing payables, accounting, et cetera. Do you spend a lot of time on kind of HR related topics?
Actually, yeah. So I'm not I'm not a traditional CFO. I'm a very operationally heavy CFO, which means that before we hire a chief people officer, both talent and HR rolled up to me. Mm-hmm. So for me, that those departments are near and dear. I was just having a budget discussion with them the other day, and I'm like, it's very hard because I'm very biased towards you. So I have to be extra hard on your budgets because I know that internally, I think that you guys should get all the money. And I'm a firm believer that your product doesn't matter. Great. You guys have a great product. You know why you have a great product? Because you have a great engineering team and you have a great product team. And if the minute you guys take away that product team and that engineering team, your product is going to fall behind. Same thing. You guys have great customer service. It's because of the team. So the only thing of value, and this I learned from retail and hospitality, you could have the most incredible food in the world, but if your service is trash, you're not going to be a good business, right? And same thing in retail. You could be selling the best product. You could have the iPhone. If your service is trash, if you don't have the right people, you're not going to make money. So for me, I think that if you're investing, wherever you're investing, it's got to come people first. And then what you want to do is you want to maximize your best people, right? That's why SaaS is there to augment, not to replace, right? So yeah, we spend a lot of time on this. We had a very lean back office team. So it's taking us some time to like line things up to get the 409A done and all of that. But we're doing leveling up all the time, right? There's a lot of inflation, obviously, which is affecting people's salaries. There's a lot of jokes around that, hey, if I didn't get a 7.5 raise, that I lost money and all of that. So I think that's going to be top of mind. And look, everybody's been hit by the Great Resignation. The thing is, it's not always financially like connected.
Absolutely.
So for me, that's the only thing that matters in a company. It's a virtuous circle, right? I think Richard Branson talks about is that your employees take care of your customers take care of the company, and the company has to take care of their employees. So it's not like customers always right. No. Your employees are always right when you're the leadership and you're the company. And then your employees make sure that the customers are happy, and then your customers pay you, so they make sure the company is happy. So I think that's the only thing leadership should be thinking about is HR and talent, not sales, not anything else, because all of that will come if you have the right people. And if you have the wrong people, no matter how great your product is, it just won't come. It just won't work.
It's fascinating. I mean, if you had to pick, right, it's kind of almost like picking a favorite child, but of all the different functions that roll up to you, right, we talked about, compensation, HR, payables, et cetera, accounting. If you could spend more time and dedicate more resources, let's say I gave you extra bandwidth, like 30% more bandwidth, what piece of your function or piece of your business do you want to focus on more at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, I think removing obstacles, removing blockers. Once again, I think it's very hard to find good talent in a market like this because just talent and sourcing is broken. People sourcing is broken. Like companies, especially at a young stage, can't measure performance. So I think all of that is very, very difficult. So what I would do is once you have good people in your company, just do everything possible in removing blockers and making their focus be on something that they could impact and make it worthwhile. And I think FP&A actually has a lot to play in there because they're the ones that are predicting the future, which is going to predict ripple effects or blockers. So right now we're growing the FP&A function. And then I have another department underneath me, which is business ops. And we're thinking of building an internal consulting team, basically ex-McKinsey, BCG type folks. I know McKinsey always gets a bad rap for being ruthless and kind of destroying universes, but that's only because we've incentivized them to destroy universes. So if we incentivize McKinsey to do good or McKinsey employees to do good, they'll do good, right? So that's essentially what I want to do. And I want to build this team that will just, if people are able to do what they're good at, they'll be happy. And if they're happy, they'll stay longer, you'll reduce churn, and they'll also bring people in. So that's basically what I'm focusing on for the rest of this year is freeing myself up, getting that 30% so I can build this business ops function and remove blockers and just empower the great people that we have in the company to do their jobs more efficiently and better.
That's great. 2022, anything that you're excited by? It doesn't have to be, business related or anything else. Anything, in the news, in the markets, in the macro that you're particularly interested in following or excited for the year?
I think I'm Russian, so I'm very cynical. I'm excited for a lot of the bullshit to be uncovered right now. I think there's going to be a squeeze on companies with bad unit economics. And I'm excited that the companies that are doing things the right way are going to get a big boost from this. And the companies that are cheating the system, essentially, or covering up things with Band-Aids, they're going to come undone. And then I'm excited for that talent that's going to become available that then we can move into the companies that are doing things right. So I think there's going to be a big opportunity. And we've seen this already happen. There's a bunch of layoffs and they're terrible. But once again, there's a labor shortage. Like layoffs without a labor shortage, terrible. Layoffs with a labor shortage, great, because those people are going to be taken out of bad situations and put into good situations. So I'm super excited for that to keep happening. And I think that's going to continue.
Well, Artem, it's been great. I mean, it's been great to have you on this show. Really enjoy the stories. Really enjoy everything that you've been able to tell us about your company. It's been a real pleasure to have you on the show today.
No, you too. Thanks, Alex. You've been a great host. And I'm excited to see the show grow. Joe Rogan, I think, is within spitting distance. you're almost there. Got to get more controversial.
That's right.
Get the Pharma Bro on here. Let's see what he has to say.
We have dozens of listeners. Dozens of listeners demand it. All right. Thank you so much.
Have a good one.
Thanks for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. It really helps to spread the word. Until next time, this is FinOps Today from RAM.